Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The death of a pack rafter earlier this month in Wrangell St. Elias National Park has raised awareness about proper preparation for the increasingly popular sport of floating backcountry rivers in tiny ultralight boats. Park spokeswoman Margie Steigerwald says 22-year-old Aiden Don of Austria was lacking key gear for the rough, icy waters of the Nizina River.
He was not wearing a personal flotation device or a dry suit.
Steigerwald also points to a lack of training and experience.
Not recommended to go on unguided trips if you're a novice to pack rafting.
Don was paddling with a partner, but the two pack rafters became separated shortly after beginning their float. Paddling guide and pack raft safety educator Monica Morin emphasizes the importance of keeping close track of fellow paddlers.
Never, ever would I allow them to get out of sight.
Morin is lead ranger for the Bureau of Land Management for the Lower Deschutes River in Oregon. The former Denali National Park backcountry ranger says she began doing pack raft safety specific education after moving to Alaska in 2013.
Sort of a side project, because a lot of my friends were telling me stories of near misses and almost accidents that they had on the river, and just felt that there was a need to kind of help catch the pack raft community up to speed with the boating community, the river community.
Morin says boaters have typically focused on road accessible rivers, but pack rafts have enabled getting to more remote waters where any trouble can have greater consequences.
You're in a completely different realm of risk.
Morin also points to pack rafters' focus on paring gear weight to a minimum, which can lead to leaving behind safety essentials like a PFD, dry suit, and helmet. Morin says pack raft trips' remote locations can also result in overcommitment to floating out.
Once you're in pack raft mode, to get out and hike can be really hard mentally.
Morin teaches pack rafters to have bailout options in case their float doesn't go as planned. She says that means carrying a map, compass, and other emergency gear inside your dry suit, noting rafts can float or blow away. Moose hunting season begins in just over 2 weeks, and hunters are up in arms over restrictions on access across military training ranges in the interior. Fort Wainwright officials say they've tried to accommodate hunters, but the ranges around Fort Greely will be busy for the next few weeks with an Air Force red flag training exercise. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Michael Bryan says he won't be going moose hunting this year because he can't get back into his camp near the base of Mount Hayes due to restrictions that'll keep him from flying through airspace over ranges around Fort Greely.
It's an area where hunters have traditionally gone for decades, and myself and my hunting partners, we've been going to our camp for 25 years.
Bryan says he's especially disappointed because Wainwright officials announced the restrictions and training schedule on July 30th, too late for him to rejigger his schedule.
At the 11th hour, the military published a training schedule and a map that eliminated or greatly reduce the hunting opportunities in a big portion of the eastern Tanana Flats.
Fort Wainwright spokesman Brady Gross says post officials have gotten some complaints about the restrictions over the past couple of weeks, but he says they've tried to accommodate hunters by coordinating with Air Force officials to stagger the red flag training schedule and open up opportunities for hunters to access some of the ranges or their airspace en route to their camps.
To keep as many areas open as possible.
Bryan agrees the Army and Air Force have tried to reach out to hunters, but he says they didn't reach very far.
They have made some marginal efforts to accommodate hunters, but very little.
Gross says Wainwright officials didn't have a lot of wiggle room this year because this round of red flag training will be especially busy. He says that's because the Air Force has adopted a 2-year cycle for the exercises that involves more aircraft and training on even numbered years. And he says on those years, the ranges will have to be set up for the heavier schedule.
They need to modify the training area to support red flag training with their units.
Wainwright officials emphasized the red flag training that began Thursday is essential to ensuring the pilots are trained and ready to quickly respond to trouble spots. And Bryan says hunters agree with that priority.
None of us hunters out there have any problem with a well-trained military. My wife is retired military. My hunting partner is a retired full-bird colonel, having served 28 years in the service.
Brian says he and other hunters have talked about the restrictions with staff of the Alaska Congressional Delegation and members of organizations like Resident Hunters of Alaska, as well as a State Department Fish and Game Advisory Panel.
The Fairbanks Area Advisory Committee for Fish and Game will be meeting in October, and this will be a point of discussion, certainly.
Brian says he hopes those talks will lead to a solution that won't keep him and his fellow hunters from getting back into their favorite hunting spots every other year. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Many come to Alaska for a short-term adventure only to find themselves permanent residents. Tomorrow night, a National Park Wilderness Program coordinator shares her story of discovery and loss in the state. As KUAC's Robert Hannon reports, Adrian Lindholm is more comfortable directing attention to the natural world than on herself.
Adrian Lindholm has spent nearly two decades introducing backpackers and day hikers to the wonders of Alaska's vast public lands. The author of several guides and books, she's also an accomplished outdoors woman who understands the enthusiasm newbies bring to their experience of the northern landscape.
That was exactly me, this wide-eyed, naive girl coming to Alaska with these very dearly and strongly held opinions.
Those opinions embraced nature and what it meant to be an independent woman. But time and experience tempered her assumptions. It's a journey she documents in her new memoir, It Happened Like This. She says the hardest part of her new book was charting the inner landscape.
I was tracking my personal evolution about independence, and it was sort of mirrored by my evolving and changing relationship with wilderness.
And like wilderness, she discovered unexpected regions and resources within herself, perhaps most importantly, coping with hope and loss. After a lifetime avoiding parenthood, she and her husband sought to start a family, only to see pregnancy after pregnancy end in miscarriage.
It was an isolating and lonely experience, and I wanted so badly for someone to sort of validate my own story and my journey, and I never really found that.
She hopes her new book offers that validation to others. While the volume ends on a high note, with the birth of their daughter Avery, more loss was ahead when brain cancer claimed Avery's life. Lindholm says that experience is for another book, but she and her husband are hoping to receive their second adopted child soon. Lindholm's reading takes place at 5:30 Tuesday at the Northern Alaska Environmental Center. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
And I'm Dan Bross.